You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hi, it's Malls. Reminder before the show to make sure that you are subscribed in Apple Podcasts. And if you're new, welcome to Please Advise Nation. Our show only works with your participation, so call 323-450-7408 with your dilemmas and life questions. Again, that's 323-450-7408 or email askpleaseadvise@gmail.com with your voice notes or emails. Thank you and enjoy. Hey everyone, it's episode 191 of Please Advise. I'm Molly McAleer. Christina Lopez is here as
Hello.
Always. Paul J. Wagenstuff is being real interesting.
Yep.
And we have our favorite, my favorite, Chris Farah. Hi guys.
Hello. Hi.
Do you guys know who Chris Farah is? You might not. Have you ever met? Did you put that together after? Okay. So I know Chris Farah through an old mutual friend, and then also she went to college with Morgan Murphy. So it was like double like, oh wow, like I already know Chris. She's the fucking best.
Yeah.
But I wanted to like, I wanted you to explain this because Chris did one of the most magical one-woman shows I've ever seen.
Oh, you are so sweet.
Well, here's the tea. Like most one woman shows are quite sad. Most one person shows are quite sad.
Yeah.
But Chris's show
used to do a bunch of good ones
because her characters
randomly. Yeah.
Yeah. But Chris created this amazing character. I had never seen anything like it. I believe that like Chris is one of like a huge inspiration for a lot of what's going on in the drag community right now. And so I would love for you to explain to Christina your show.
I am a – okay, for this character, I dress up as a bio queen, also known as a faux queen. Mm-hmm. It's a person that is born with female parts who decides to dress in drag as a female. I look like a drag queen, as opposed to like playing a drag king or whatever. So my character is Fancy, and she's based on the song by Bobby Gentry and made famous by Reba McEntire. Do you know it's like a Southern storytelling song? Mm-hmm. It goes, here's your one chance, Fancy, don't let me down. You know that song?
I don't know that song.
Well, here's
you sing that very beautifully.
Best thing is that I didn't know that song either. And like, that's part of why it can be so funny. Cause like this character's attachment to this song is like it's absurd.
Yes.
Like if you don't know it, because you're like, oh my, like who, like how is this person so into this? It's like very, it's brilliant. But keep going.
I mean, if you had like a 7-verse song that just details your like birth as a baby to making it to the goddamn top, which I'll write that song for you, Molly. Like straight up, it won't be as good, but like just because I'm not like a goddamn genius, but like I will write your life song.
Oh, thank you, honey. I would love that.
Like as like a country belting, like and it has themes of feminism that is like beyond and like sex positive and just get that fucking money. Just like there's, this is so crazy. My mother used to sing it to me as a baby. My mom plays guitar. So as like a lullaby, she would sing me this song about a poor country girl turned highfalutin prostitute. She's just a prostitute, but just made a bunch of money doing it. And like she came from nothing and then just like lives in mansions. And then that's not like where the song ends. Like the final verse of it is like, she literally goes like, now in this world, there's a lot of self-righteous hypocrites that will call you bad and criticize your mama for and criticize my mama for turning me out no matter how little we had. And she goes on and just like, I don't care what you think. I fucking did it. I got out.
Yeah.
And it has like such a powerful message that it has always stayed with me. By the way, I like conversely couldn't have had a better upbringing. Like I had all the things. Like it's funny because I love this song so much. And like just straight up, I'll be honest, I was like raised super wealthy. Not like Paris Hilton wealthy, but like I've never had to like, you know, I live a very comfortable, blessed life. I'm just being honest.
Yeah. Hometown is Orange County, which is.
Okay. But one thing that I will say as like someone who's not you is that one thing I loved about learning about this show and discovering it is that you're not unassuming. You're very funny conversationally. You're like, but I also think of you as like kind of like a glam girl. Like it takes like a brave woman in some ways to do drag because at the essence of drag, there's also like a slight ugliness to it. Do you know what I mean? It's not effortlessly glamorous for everyone. And that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah.
So
it's also like, what is the interpretation there? You know what I mean? Like the kind of is like male performing femininity. Like what is the challenge of that? But I think there is something to that.
Right. Yeah. But not every like woman would necessarily choose to explore that. And I didn't know what your show was when I was going to it. So that was a surprise in and of itself that was happening. But like a lot of people also like are around in comedy and not everyone's funny. And I knew that you did comedy, but I didn't know. I didn't like, I guess what I'm saying is like, I didn't expect you to be unfunny, but most people have a limit and it like hits like the average or slightly above it. But like, could not believe, like literally, like when I say I didn't know you had it in you, I don't mean that as like a slight, like I mean that in like,
expectation
that is so, it was so high level. It was so well done. It was so thought out. Like there's a lot of like, you know, especially when you say like, oh, like I had a good upbringing or whatever. A lot of people would be like, oh, well then like it better fucking be good. Right. No, like Chris blew me away. Like this would be like, if I had a kid and I gave them $1,000 to go do something and they came back to me with this, I'd be like, how much do you need to make a movie? Like, I'd be like, it was unbelievable. I've literally never seen, from some of the most talented people I know in this town, I've seen a million shows. I've seen people who are on SNL now at their first live show, the first time they did stand up ever. And I was like, that person's a star. They have it. And then, sure enough, proven right, they like are working in this field majorly. You blew me away. Like it was crazy. Like I could cry. Like I'm it's like, so
about
good.
To cry. I'm about
it was
to cry.
No. Like it's just really good. Like to see some. Like you explored an area. Oh my god. Why am I crying? I'm too sensitive these days.
Like, I love you.
I
so
cry.
No,
like,
I can't believe you're saying this to me. And I love you so.
No,
much.
I severely, just I feel
and I,
that
like,
way.
Appreciate it. So much. I
I'm the only one in the room not crying.
This is a rare please advise moment where we're so
Molly,
moved by the talent
so,
of a guest.
Molly, that is so fucking kind.
No,
I'm
but
so
like,
okay,
I mean that because like, you know, you see like even like really talented people who could potentially achieve like what you did and like what was probably like a first effort in a lot of ways at something of that scale, and they fall short of it because like they don't feel like they need to prove all that by like doing all the legwork that you did. It was a beyond professional show. And like you did it all yourself. You carried it. You created the concept. I didn't know what the fuck was going on half the time, but I was like laughing my ass off. And then like when it all came together at the end, like I didn't know you could sing like that. You showed off all of your strengths in a way that I've never seen like a new performer do before. And I don't know what we do with that. Like, I wish my answer was like, and that's why you need to do this. But like, I just think you're so talented. And how many people have you had on? How have I've never said that to someone ever, but I think you deserve it. You know,
Molly, thank you so much.
I love you.
I really want to jump on top of you and hug
you. You have the softest hands. It's like, have you ever washed a dish? Like, you're the softest.
Yes, I wear gloves, yes.
Oh, my God.
Because I do manicures, and so I got to, like, protect them. I wear gloves. They have cotton on the inside. I'll send you it from Amazon. No,
they're Gazy.
Wait, they're Mr. Clean, but they have, like...
Oh. I love that. You wear lotion under Mr. Clean gloves.
That's underneath. So, like, so you can do two things at once.
But you're so talented. You're so talented, and I adore you, and, like, I can't – I just hope, like – I hope, like, whatever happens for you, like, it's as big as, like, you deserve.
I don't even know what to say.
I know. Like, I'm a loser. Like
– No, you're so – listen, I'm going to tell you this right now. I can't – I'm so appreciative and grateful. Like,
I didn't even mean to, but, like, it's true. Like,
part of me is like, do I need to leave? Like,
no, but, like, no. Here's the thing. Like, you know when, like, something's on your heart and you're like, I can't, like, really discuss this without, like, getting there. And then, like, I'm in an emotional place where I've been watching, like, adult children, like, ask their elderly step parents to legally adopt them and, like, just cry soldiers coming home.
Oh, I love, like, crying.
I'm just like, I'm
home.
A big raw open wound. And then, like, also, like, when it comes to my friends and their accomplishments, like, that makes me so proud and so happy. And, like, you know, I don't know. Like, I wish more – I'm sure a lot of stuff came for you from that. And I know you earned a lot of fans, but, like, which is the most annoying expression in this industry. Because, like, oftentimes what does that result in?
Of course.
Having a lot of fans, right? Like, can I have money, though? Like, yeah. But, like, I hope that, like – I wish more had come of that for you. I hope, like, you revive it. I, like, think that that is, like – because you were ahead of a curve in a big way. Like, I remember leaving and being like, whoa, like, that's brave, like, that she did that. Like, that was, like, it involved such commitment to a performance, like, discomfort, comfort. Like, you sold something that could take a lot out of a person. And it was just very special. And to know that you wrote it all, it's, like, amazing. You know? So anyway, everyone should see Fancy. Do you have it, like, on video somewhere?
Yeah, I have. Okay, so this version you saw was her one-person show. And then I came back and did I did her as a cabaret character where she sings a song and then dispenses, like, some sort of life lesson and then interacts with, like, a Twitter feed live with people in the audience asking her questions. And it's, like, in a very sex-positive way. And I can give out prizes and things. Like, at that time, like, Pleasure Chest partnered with me, and which was really, really nice.
That's great. That's the money.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it was just an LA show. So, like, the fact that they even gave me anything, but, like, I had prizes for people, and, you know, she's very, like, campy, of course. Like, listen, I'm so thankful that you say that. Like, what inspires me is, like, I worked her out at the Cavern Club, which is, like, a basement restaurant in Silver Lake, Casita del Campo. And, like,
I've been there. It's incredible. Yeah, That's really fun. Who's the woman with the camel toe?
Oh my God! Who doesn't have a camel toe? There?
It's like, that's like her Jackie costume. Is like her is just basically like full out like labia camel toe.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
a prosthetic. Yeah. It's brilliant.
I don't know.
But
Jackie B performs there. You know, like, it's just anyway. So camp comedy has always been my thing, and it came at a time where, we were both like, you know, like around a place that like I had to like figure out a different way to perform because I wasn't like being able to like.
Because that's the other
there,
thing, too, is
know?
That UCB, like, requires a certain thing of you. Like, all of those groups do. And, like, very rarely is, like, true expression or, like, they hint at it. They're like, we would love if, like, someone came with something different. But people know what plays there. And, like, the fact that you did this was – that's another reason why I thought, like, God, that's so brave. Because it was true for you. It was true to you. And it's, like, exactly the kind of thing that most people don't – like think to do. They're not brave enough to do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll do her again, you know, like it's so she's gonna come back and, you know, feed a part of my life now that was feeding me a part then, but it's like been, I mean, it's been like, God, maybe like four or five years since I've hosted one night shows as her, but like did a full length show. Like I did three. I've had three. I did like a full length Christmas show that I did. You know, like
what if we did a Please Advise live show and Fancy opened?
Oh yeah,
that would be the sickest thing ever. Because I mean, I already cried on the show about how good you are. Like I feel like
I would host anything as Fancy, especially for you.
And like also, but like you gotta like put that video up behind a paywall or something.
I
like
look completely
you
different than I mean. I shot a full length special as her. And I gotta put it
fucking
up.
But put on padding and shit. Like, you know, you have obvious commitment to that character. Like, but like, pull it back out. It's in you. Like that. It's so in you.
I think
like
I really needed this, and I'm so thankful that it's happening on your podcast. But
I love you.
I just want to say, I know you can just go back and listen to this anytime you need
I'm going to. This is my new Xanax. Well, this is literally my like. I love my therapist. Don't need her. You know, I just, like, have a loop of this.
Well, isolate that me crying about you section and send that to you.
Oh, I'm going your to ringtone. Listen to it every goddamn morning. Yeah,
and it's
every
that night. Oprah Gail. It's Oprah talking about Gail Clip. She's the friend. Nobody like she's the friend everyone wants. Yeah, she's the mother. Yeah. That's how I feel. Like, it's truly, like, God bless. Genius. Mommy, God bless.
God bless, Mommy.
That's the other thing. Mommy, God bless is like, Mommy. That is, Chris always calls everyone Mommy. I heard her call you Mommy when I was in. And I was like, closing the door to pee. And I was like, Christina doesn't even know who she's about to meet. Like, and what an intro. Like, you call everyone Mommy. It's the funniest thing.
Oh, I just took it as like, I don't know. I'm used to being called mommy.
No, she calls everyone Mommy, though. It's like,
there are
the
people that I wouldn't
thing.
Call Mommy.
Sure, I assume. But that's like you're very
like people that I love that I like. I mean, here's the thing. You didn't know me well, but I've obviously listened to the podcast, so I knew you more than you me. Like that's why I was like, I know where you're from, bitch. You
Brittany
tell me.
Doesn't know you.
I didn't even listen to Please Advise. Yes, oh my god. I like love when someone listens to the show. That's like crazy to me.
It
like
always
when
makes you a little cringy. I don't know why.
I know. I'm like, I'm so
you're
sorry.
You're a little private, honey. You're a little private.
Yeah. I know Christina literally did you see
closes her arms.
I would love to see this bitch in a police interrogation. Like, can you imagine
something out of me?
That no, the tells that you give away. I'd be like, oh,
you can't play poker.
Yeah, like no, literally. So by the way, you cross the arms, I'm sure they'd be able to figure out where the body's buried. Yeah, they'd be like, okay, the body's in a lake. Yeah, they're like, that's just like you, like you're so, like you kill me. Like you're so funny.
Truthful soul.
Yeah, you know what though? Like this is another thing, just a Please Advise like life tip. Like, I love talking to my friends about like who like what I appreciate about them and like I don't expect it back. It's so nice when someone says something like back, but like you will never feel bad about saying a nice thing to your friend even if it seems corny as fuck. Yeah. Like I like try to practice that the more I get older because I'm like I don't think I always was like vocal with my friends about how much they've like really changed my life and I appreciate them.
I was talking to someone about this because like our relationship is like very interesting in that I said this to you lately. I was like, I feel like we've been all about business and I haven't told
I know,
you how much
so
I love
sad.
You.
I love you too. Like, I know.
I need to take care of the marriage part of it.
I love you for that. No, yeah. Have you seen Us yet?
Yes. But I would
I'm
see
so
it again.
Jealous.
Okay. I would see it again.
Good. I like watched some Us spoilers when I was like really drunk, like two Saturdays ago. I watched or like that the Saturday after the movie came out. I was really drunk on the way home from a bar. I never go to bars anymore. I went, I had shitty white wine. And that's been the death of me, like shitty white wine. And I was like hammered and I started just watching Us spoilers. And I was like, why are you doing this? You don't want to do this. Like you're dying to see this movie. But thankfully I didn't remember any of them when I woke up the next day. But I was like, oh God, like you tried to ruin Us for yourself last night. Trying to look in the mirror.
So I don't know if you're probably going to think I'm sadistic for this, but I actually read the spoilers before I went to see the movie.
Why'd you do that?
Because I knew I was going to be too preoccupied to figure out what was going on to actually enjoy like the experience of the film, but also to like picking up on things. I don't know.
Right.
That's why you have to see it twice.
Yeah. So I am going to see it again because I heard a really good analysis of it on this podcast that I love called Still Processing. Mm-hmm. So I do want to, I was intending to see it again just to like, I don't know.
I like
so
the
many
idea
things that I could see.
Of a podcast called Still Processing.
Yeah.
What's that about? Because like that's the beauty in processing is when you're still processing.
Yeah.
You know, that's when the real beauty of processing is.
Yeah. It's a
what's
New York
it about?
It's a New York Times podcast where these two New York Times Black New York Times writers, Jenner Wortham and Wesley Morris.
Oh, fans of both.
Yes, very, very great writers. Talk about stuff that is happening in culture through their lenses. So, like, Us, obviously, is something that they were talking about. They did a really great episode about Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
They did a really great episode about the Oscars. Like,
oh, I'm so listening to that.
Yeah, and one of my friends actually produces it. So I
love that.
Yeah, so I really enjoy it. They're going on a hiatus right now, but the back catalog is so long. And so like definitely go out and check it out. But
I need a good new I love a storytelling podcast. Like I've been listening to like Broken Hearts and I started to get into Cold, but they do require like a ridiculous amount of like pure tracking. Like the best time to listen to a podcast, like you can't wash dishes and listen to a podcast like that. But I need more podcasts that have like discussion in them. That's not just like people like I need another like please advise where there's like bumpers, where there's like a something moving something, yeah. Or a podcast that's like gonna focus on just one subject. Like yeah. That's Troy's The Smush Room, which by the way is going full on iTunes really soon. Ooh. If not already. It used to be half Patreon.
Yeah.
But now it's going full on iTunes, which I'm so excited Troy. About. And we're Troy earned it, baby. And we're bringing in a new guy named Ross. What?
A new guy named Ross.
Russ. He Russ. Actually like has a he has like a degree in like pop culture.
Oh, nice.
So I'm really excited for that.
Kind of situation?
What?
Like a Marshall McLuhan kind of situation?
I don't know who that is.
He was like, yeah, someone who like was kind of taught about culture at large, pop culture at large.
Oh.
A cultural critic that like used to teach at Columbia.
That's like honestly, my dream job is like getting to go back to college, like going and teaching a college about like a very like specific niche area of pop culture I'm obsessed
like
with.
Like language. You're so good at so much, you know? Like as a writer, your language usage is just like,
thank you.
It's otherworldly.
Building
like your point of view is otherworldly. Like, I don't know what you could, I mean, like you'd have to also try and teach that. And I don't like, and the fact that you did it so young is like, I don't know how you.
My therapist said that to me this week. She's like, you know, you don't think like normal people. And I was like, no, actually I don't know that because I've only been in my own brain. And I literally am so confused sometimes about like, why I'm like having a why I feel like I'm either taking steps back in a conversation or why something is not connecting or I'm not understanding someone else. And I'm like, I've realized that my brain, what frustrates me is I will never spend a day not in my brain. So I will never know what it's like to deal with me. You know what I mean? Or and that sounds so narcissistic, but wouldn't it be nice to know? Like to witness
yes
yourself
no.
outside of yourself for a in,
yes
for a
and
day.
No, it's a double edged sword.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, wouldn't it be nice to see? Like,
I don't know. I think I'm a little much. I think I relate to what you're saying because I'm an only child.
Right. Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it just that's like the only child.
I don't have a mirror.
Or like, you look in the mirror all day long and just like that is what your world is. Like, you
right,
know?
Right. Yeah, you
I have
mean...
a brother, so I can't. I have a sibling.
Yeah,
who like I have an older brother who's.
I'm crazy. You know, like that's what I mean. I guess,
but
there's
I
a
still
way that we're
think
our
that,
artists.
Like...
We this is why maybe we have a lot in common when it comes to expression and having like a singular expression that doesn't question not to have it be expressed. Does that make
sure.
sense?
I mean, here's my POV on it.
Okay,
I just. Think that I think that anyone can think the way I think if you read a lot about the same thing. Like, I don't think that my perspective is like particularly unique as much as I like have to examine things from a lot of angles because I have a lot of information.
But you're just talking content. But the way that you're saying that someone could write something that I like and have the same content, but you're neglecting the way that you express it, your style.
Thanks, Chris. Jesus, look at this podcast.
No,
I'm going to have to really brainstorm to find something nice to say about Christina. But I'm just kidding. I love you. You know I do.
I mean, like, I'm a fan of yours, so I know
anyone.
What I'm talking about. Like,
Thank you, Chris.
Your language usage, you know, like, you're just, and also, yeah, you're very bright and observational. So there's, like, a lot of things happening. So, yes, of course, someone who, like, eats the same gossip
right.
that you do will have the same content and might have, like, a similar, like, premise of a joke, but there's, or whatever idea of a joke, but there's no way that it would come out the way it would if Molly wrote it.
That is so sweet.
Like,
I really appreciate
need to leave
that.
You guys alone?
No, I know, like, no, I know. Should we actually bring some other people into this relationship, like our callers, maybe?
Oh my god!
Should we like hear what we? Hopefully, we can compliment them as strongly as we've been kind to one another. I'd like to practice this compassion throughout the entire podcast today.
I have a podcast for you, by the way, because you were all like saying your favorite podcast. Do you listen to Britney's Graham? Singular.
Oh my god! You know what? I really wanted to do that, and then like it was not aligning for a while. Where like the girl. Either it was like, first of all, when I had really bad allergies last year and I sounded nasal as fuck all the time. By the way, like my nose has been starting to drip recently. So I'm like, okay, great.
Please.
Round two.
I'm sorry.
But it didn't start in January this year, which is good. But Molly, slow down. What were you saying? Oh, I really wanted to do it. And then, like, it just kind of, like, misconnected. And then, like, I think basically, like, the conversation just didn't pick up. But I really want to do that podcast because I fucking love Brittany and her Instagram.
You need to do it.
Pure thing in the entire world. You understand.
And this is the time to do it because where the fuck is she? She literally, I'm sorry, but she literally, like, she fired
her. Taking care of her daddy.
Well, yeah, her Andrew Wallet, who was, like, the Yelp lawyer that her dad found, that's how he found it through Yelp, and had no other big clients, who became her conservator, like, just quit, and we haven't seen her in this long. And like Tess Parker is literally going to the courthouse, like, an
investigator. Who's Tess Parker?
Tess Barker. Tess
Barker
is does the podcast with Babs Gray.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Okay.
So, but they do Lady to Lady as well, with Brandy. And, but they do, like, the specialized, just like Brittany's Instagram, that it's so, you would love it. You need to be on.
I love niche content. That's my shit. Anyway, we got to take our calls.
Yeah.
Hey, Malls, Christina, Wags, and Guest. I am trying to figure out a work dilemma right now. I work for a nonprofit organization and have for about 2.5 years. I am, in my early 30s, and I have been working consistently since I graduated college 11 years ago. I love my job. I love the organization I work for. I love my coworkers, and I believe very strongly in the mission of the organization. I have a wonderful supervisor 90% of the time, but the other 10% of the time, I feel like I'm disappointing her or failing her if I make a mistake. And so it's gotten to be a very stressful work environment. We're kind of in that phase right now where I made a mistake, which in the grand scheme is not a huge deal. I work in volunteer coordination, and she's just been very upset with me. It's been a stressful work environment to be a part of. And this happens usually about once a year, and I fix it and everything's fine. But it feels really awful right now in the middle of it, and I don't know why it feels worse this time around than it does otherwise. But I just wanted to call and find out how I can feel okay and forgive myself for making mistakes and for feeling like I'm disappointing people. A big part of my sense of self is wrapped up in my job, and I know it shouldn't be. So I guess another question would be, how do I find my sense of self and sense of worth outside of a professional organization? Thank you so much for everything that y'all do, and I appreciate you so much, and can't wait to hear what you have to say. Thanks.
Okay, I'm, like, a little slow, and I think I want to know, I think ultimately I understand your question, which is, like, how to have a life outside of work that makes you care more about life than your work. But I do think that some context is important here for me. So basically, she's been working at a nonprofit that she really loves.
Yeah.
She's been working steadily since her, you know, her graduation. She's
first a job.
Professional young woman. She recently, like, had a little misstep at work. She fucked up something small. Yeah. Her boss was a little bit harsher on her than she should have been. But basically the issue now is that the boss seems to have, like, some sort of grudge or personal issue.
Yeah.
And that's, like, so it's affecting her day-to-day health, mental health.
Yep.
I mean, wow.
I would say
there's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely, like, I wonder if she's a female picking up, like, on intuition that because of maybe past mistakes, or maybe someone thinks that a new blood situation would be good. Like, I think that I would trust her instincts that, like, if something doesn't feel right, to, like, move on. I also feel like sometimes we get comfortable in situations, so the universe wants us to, like, move on. And so sometimes we get something to, like, kick us in the rear. There was something about the way she described
the situation, yeah.
Yeah, that made me feel like, girl, like,
it's time to move on.
There's another reason, too, that kind of jumped out to me about, like, same, she should move on, but about, like, sort of this boss's behavior.
Yes.
Which is that you might not realize the impact your mistake had on her, because mm-hmm. perhaps you were handling some duties that actually were hers,
yeah,
and that she should have overseen more carefully. So the reason why she's more upset about what to you seems like a small mistake is because it's actually big and affects her more. And, like, sometimes bosses, like, they are, I mean, most bosses are very strategic hires, and that they find people who are better than they are to do what needs to get done. That's what a good boss is. But then some bosses also take that to an extreme and become very lazy and reliant on people to run things that aren't their job.
Yeah.
And so that could be an underlying issue, because the fact that she's continued to be dark about it, like maybe she's going a little bit harder on you because she thinks you need that extra attention, that you're the squeaky wheel. But there could be a reason why you seem very smart and professional. So I think you'd know if you were the squeaky wheel versus like there's a little bit of this that's just it's undue.
Yeah. Part of me is like, good on you for having a boss you like 90% of the time. Like that, there's also that kind of like thing that I'm just like, you can't have it all. Like it's not always going to be perfect with your like supervisor. It's just like the nature of work.
That's another thing is like, don't confuse your overachieving behavior with like reality and like what your actual like expectation is. Like sometimes, like if you're that straight A student who gets one slap on the wrist, like it's going to hurt a lot because you've never been slapped on the wrist before.
Yeah.
Maybe it is a sensitivity issue with her where she's just like never felt discomfort because she's always, this is like kind of her first fuck up.
Yeah.
So I feel like she obviously has to have a conversation with her boss where she's very frank and honest and goes, I tend to have perfectionist tendencies and whatever. She'll say this better than I am because, you know, she is a perfectionist. And then be like, I know that X and Y from like last year, because the situation that happened like recently has been like really, you know, it was like really, I really regret it. And at the same time, I would love to A, find out how I can make it up to you, and B, like show you that so we can ultimately move on in our social situation, and it will make me feel
better.
And
I would say like feel comfortable to say like I've noticed a change in our dynamic that makes me feel like I need to repair something here. And I'd be like, if I need to show you in a certain way or whatever, that was like more or less those were isolated incidents. Mm-hmm. And like, what do I have to do to get back in your good graces? Sort of like, what's the missing piece here? Cause like, I would be interested to know what the bosses say. Like, you consistently like sort of rush through the second part of something, or, you know, you don't always read directions very clearly. Like there, it could be something very small like that, that she just, and she needs to say, like, I've noticed it's affected the way that we interact.
Yeah. I wanted to circle back on both of our observation about like maybe this wasn't the right gig for her and kind of dive into that a little bit, because my sense is that like, and I want people to understand this, is like you can do something, you can do a job good but not excel at it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And that's an indication that might not be the right job for you.
True.
So like you could be good at your job, but are you excelling at it? Are you, you know, you don't have to be crushing it constantly, but are you performing to a point that's like it jives with what
are you doing it because you care?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I want to know a little more context, and she's had this job. I don't know if she's had the same job since she's been out of college for 11 years or something in the same field. But
I think she said she worked consistently in the field.
Yes.
Her second question is really why I think that if ultimately she gets fired or she has to leave, this is the reason why. Because you're having an issue with your self-identity being tethered, if you will,
yes,
to your job or whatever. And the truth is you are not your job. You are not your, you know, you're not your craft. You're not one job. You're not your partner. You're not your children. You are a separate organism that lives and breathes and has like a mind behind it. So I think that all too often, which by the way, like we all do this, all too often that can be confused. And that is a perfect reason to change things up a little bit, because then you see yourself and you experience your behaviors in a different setting. And that's more who you are. You are the sum of the decisions that you want, your goals, your values. I mean, it's, you know, it's so much.
But like one thing that really stuck with me is like ultimately her ending question was very telling, because it sounds like she is over invested in her work in a way that is unhealthy and she knows it. And it's, I'll tell you something. I've had aha moments where like finally something like developed in my personal life, like a relationship, or I, you know, became interested in like a hobby in a deeper way. I've been like, oh my God, like my work doesn't have to be my life. Like that's not normal. People have families. People have relationships. I don't have to not have those things to be good at my job.
Yeah.
And like you start to realize like, oh, this is what jobs are. Like they're not an identity. It's not like it's not the sum of my value. Like, it's not the thing that makes assigns value to me in any way. Like, it's a part of what I do. It's something I'm proud of. But it's you sound like a workaholic a little bit. That's what I suffer from as a workaholic, is realizing, oh, not everyone lives like that.
I want to touch on something, because this question hits at a heart of something that's been bubbling up in the ether, and I've come across a lot of things. So I actually have reference for this. Like, I'm glad this question came in. It does have to do with a very millennial trait.
Work-life balance?
Yeah. So what we're going to – so, like, I was reading a manager book. That's what I'm doing these days, because I attended leadership training. So now it's like, ooh, I get to see, like, how that all works, because I think managing up is a really cool idea. It's like, instead of, like, becoming a manager and, like, taking on people that are under you, it's, like, changing the organization from, like, the bottom up in a way. And that kind of, like, fucks with me, my brain, in a good way. I don't know. But so I'm reading this manager book, and it's about Gallup polls about the workplace. And what they've discovered is that everyone in the world wants a good job. This is true for millennials and Generation Z. More so than ever in history of corporate cultures, employees are asking, does this organization value my strengths and my contributions? Does this organization give me a chance to do what I want to do, what I do best every day? Because for millennials and Generation Z, a job is no longer a job. It's their life. And so this also hits on a New York Times article that came out, which was like, why are young people pretending to love work? And it's something that people are noticing, is that, like, a lot of the way millennials talk about work is, like, so much a part of their identity, period. And so if you're not a part of the, like, rise and grind culture, right, there's something wrong with you. Or, like, if you,
right. Oh, you lack aspiration.
Exactly. And so there's a book that I actually want to recommend for you, because one of the things that I've been doing is kind of analyzing everything that I do and seeing, like, well, this is work. Like, when I look at Twitter, that's work, because I work in social media. So, like, that's technically work. I'm working when I look at Twitter. So there's this book called How to Not Always Be Working by Marley Grace. And it's a toolkit that, like, makes you kind of think about, okay, these are the things that I do in my day. This is technically work. How do I cultivate these other areas of my life so that I can be a more holistic person and take a more holistic approach? And so, like, what I've realized is that so much of my day and so much of what I do is tied to, like, my job and also podcasting in general, that, like, my personal cultivation is so, like, I couldn't even fill out a bubble of things that I do for my personal life.
Right. I mean, I'll say that I will say that, like, workaholism has started to become, like, like an aspirational trait.
Yeah. Hustle.
I'm a hustler. Absolutely. And I think that definitely a part of that is because of constant accusations of being lazy, which I think millennials got a lot because
there's
of
that and, like, stagnant wages. So, like, we need to be making money where we can't. We literally cannot afford
college. Like, it's a flex to be like, guess what? I fucking worked today. Yeah. Like, that's a flex in our world, is to be like, guess who has a job, motherfucker? And, like, you know, another aspect of that too is
benefits,
my God, wait. I had the best point. I just fucking lost it. Sorry. I've noticed, like, the last probably, like, I would say the last, like, decade or so, the narrative around celebrity and creativity, like, something that stars have come to rely on to, like, sort of prove their gravitas is, like, you know, I work at it every day. I work all night. My job is, like, my life. There was nothing. I couldn't have done anything else. Like, you didn't hear, like, the Beach Boys back in the day being like, you know, like, I couldn't function if I wasn't playing music. Like, I wake up and the first thing I do is I start mixing songs. Like, I start putting down beats. Like, I start doing this. I start doing that. People didn't used to talk like that.
Yeah.
Now I feel like people have leaned on the idea of, I eat, sleep, eat, and breathe this. And, like, that wasn't always the case. And people have always looked towards, like, historically, people have looked towards successful people and this trait that comes up now. And I think a lot of it also came from tech culture, because it is normal when you're developing stuff and developing products in a new industry. It is normal to have that startup business in your garage that you work at tirelessly. It's why Elon Musk, you know, people talk about him sleeping at the Tesla factory. It's because, like, if you want to be great, you fucking grind. And, you know, we've been, I think, robbed of, like, the baby boomer culture, et cetera. Like, a lot of that stuff was about, you know, we work so that we can take golf vacations. Yep. We work so that we can have that Florida house.
Yep.
We do, you know, and with us, it's like, I want to fucking grind so I can be successful, so I can go to Ibiza and take a fucking Instagram picture, yeah, so people can know I fucking worked, you know, and it's less about, it's less about enjoying your free time. My stepdad was always someone who was very good about working to spend his money in his free time. Mm-hmm. That meant, like, you know, he was a wealthy man, and like that meant for him boats. That meant for him, like, never, no one ever picking up a check around him. Mm-hmm. That was like his flex, you know, because he worked very hard for what he had. Now I think with millennials, it's just like, also, we've been tainted off the idea of, like, marriage. Like, we're of a no new friends culture. Like, what the fuck else are you supposed to do when you're semi-antisocial and convinced that marriage is a scam?
Honestly, I'm like, ooh, okay, well, I'm not married right now and I don't have kids. Like, I'm never going to have this amount of time to, like, pursue my dream. So I might as well grind the fuck out of it until that happens.
And, like, in the meanwhile, the people that seem to always be living the richest lives are the people that went to Europe with $1,000 and backpacked around and, like, you know, saved all that money, and then they quit that bad job and they backpacked around knowing they could get like, you know, that's definitely a thing of privilege. But I also know a lot of kids who have, that are broke, who have done that. And, like, that to me is, like, the true dream, is, like, yeah, not being in work and, like, literally your education is, like, being a student of the world. That's real wealth.
Well, that's
to
culture,
me, emotional,
yeah,
wealth. Yeah.
Chris, what did you want to say?
Wealth, yeah, wealth is options. But I think that for her, it speaks to status. You know what I'm saying? Like, work status, marriage status. Like, you're going to, like, in order for us to grow and be individuals that contribute to society, society has taught us that we need status, like, whether that comes with, like, rich parents or, like, very famous parents or fame, like, your fame.
Fame.
And in this social media Instagram culture, like, that is what we're showing, or that's what influencers show, is, like, the status they have achieved in X, Y, and Z ways.
Yeah.
So I think that for people, like, they, you know, there are a lot of people that pick as many as they can and work tirelessly at them, or one or two, you know?
Yeah.
Like, having it all means, in this world, having a family, child status too, marriage status, yes, work status, but, like, either my husband's so, you know, or both of us are killing it.
Yeah.
That is ideal because of a boss bitch culture. It's like, yeah, we both are just killing it, you know? Like, having all the vacations, having all of the homes, having, like, all the cars, the best makeup, the best hair, like, the, yeah, best, like, access to skincare and dermatology as we age, you know, like, that is what, I guess, society has told us to aim for. And so I understand the drive of a person to be, like, you know, every morning, like, hitting it.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, it's a weird thing when you're, like, an artist and you're trying to hit, like, a talent or, like, something like that.
Yeah.
But I can, if I could just, like, have a job where I could, yeah, just kill it in that way, I mean, I can see myself falling into the trap.
When you say fame, you're right. Like, I think our generation, I'll speak for myself directly, like, I graduated into the peak and moved to LA in the peak of, like, the Kitson paparazzi culture. And, like, now that the paparazzi is, like, sort of leaned off, like, the benefits of negative fame have, like, become very apparent. I feel like kids are more now geared towards the hustle and money versus fame, which is, I think, a great first step, because I think a lot of people, I'll speak for myself, like, in my generation, like, fame was sort of a goal, good, bad, however you came into it, because that was money at the time. That's what, like, you know, Heidi and Spencer, you know,
but Kardashians did it.
But there are people that, like, you know, creators and stuff who are, like, more focused on work that will earn money than necessarily, like, being on a magazine, you, yeah, know? And I think, sure, that that's, like, a hustle. But to answer your overall question, I mean, I would consider, for me, like, Amazon customer returns is great, and I know it's a different type of work. That's my fun, though. It's always been my game. I always wanted to work as soon as I could. But, like, find something that is the exact opposite of what you do all day at work that you enjoy, and engage in that.
That's what I was going to circle back to. Also, it's just, like, we never think about our personal lives as something that we have to, like, really work at in terms of, like, to,
right,
cultivate, like, the healthiness of it, to cultivate good habits, to cultivate
your self-care
and stuff, yeah, like that. Like, mm-hmm, that's something that you actually have to be cognizant and work at. It's not going to come naturally. And so,
right,
like, really maybe take that intense focus that you have about your relationship with your boss and turn it inward and like work at developing that,
being
that
more
life
unbothered
that you want to.
Unbothered by that, you know, because again, I also think that it might not be as personal as, you know, as it's coming across to you at all.
Yeah.
Like, yes, she might feel like she needs to manage you a little bit harder, but I really do think like some of the attitudinal issues, like if, unless you know that she does that to people when like she doesn't like them, I think that there's definitely an aspect here that it's maybe not as personal as you're taking it.
Yeah.
And it won't feel as impactful if you have other things in your life you care about.
Yeah.
Like whether that be an artistic outlet, whether that be like a physical outlet, like working out or doing something you wouldn't normally do. I fucking like apple picking, literally. I know this is like a joke, but like that was my favorite day this whole year. Like it was just like my favorite day. And like that fuels me. Like, I'm like, I'll fucking work every day to apple pick next year. Like, that's like the best, you know? It feels really good.
Yeah.
Find something that makes you feel good. And
yeah,
like,
what's your apple picking?
Yeah, like, what are you doing out in nature?
Experiences with new people. Yeah, and nature, like, often reconnecting with nature and just, like, feeling the earth or going to a beach will, like, center you in a way that is cosmic and is real.
Yeah, and if you're, like, working out in the rural world, go be a little bit more cosmopolitan. If you're, like, working in the middle of the dead-ass city, fucking go out to the country. Yeah, like, switch up the environment. Like, it's in L.A., it's in particular, it's so easy to forget that people are good. It's so easy to forget that, like, it's not like this everywhere else. Like, and I don't even mean this, like, and I can sum it up in a word, but there's a vibration and a feeling here that's like you need to shake off your body sometimes. And like, I never went on vacation. I never even allowed myself a trip to Palm Springs for years. My first 7 years living in LA, I never went anywhere ever except for home for Christmas. And it was because I was terrified that something was going to happen with work and I needed to be here for that. And the reality is that I was never, one time I was in Amsterdam when I got a job interview and I had to do a Skype on it, and it did ruin my time in Amsterdam. That said, that was the one fucking time I've ever done anything. And it was like, okay, I have to be in LA for this. And there was still a way to get out of it. So if you can like go put yourself in a totally opposite environment, you might not be as needed as you think you are. You might just be like too plugged into it and find out like, oh, the world isn't going to fall apart if I take the stick out of my ass for 15 minutes. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Another good article to read on this was Anne Helene Peterson's article in BuzzFeed about the generation, like generation, the millennial generation being the burnout generation.
Mm-hmm.
Just something else.
Yeah. Cause also like a lot of our jobs, it sounds like you have a pretty structured job in nonprofit, but a lot of the millennial jobs too are like less structured.
Yeah.
And lack of structure will beat you down.
It's like a lot less of a hard 9-to-5.
I learned the most meaningful thing I talked about this last week that I learned in therapy was like, keep, like, she will sit with me and like be like, write down Monday 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. emails, like, you know, like really like make me Mark Wahlberg out my schedule like hour by hour. And it has made my life so much better because I don't feel like I'm running around doing nothing all day. I'm ticking off tasks that I have scheduled in an appropriate and fair way to myself. And if there's things that I can't fit in there, maybe I don't concentrate on this second pilot idea that I want to develop. I know I only have time for the first. Literally, create a schedule for yourself with your tasks, because oftentimes managers don't do that very well anymore. And yeah, I think that's also why a lot of millennials wind up burning out, especially if you're your own boss.
It's been a solid game changer for me. I've started using like a planner. So I go in the morning. My thing is like when I first get to work, I go and I open my planner and I write out by hand what my meetings for the day are going to be. So I know like what's ahead and like what I need to prepare for. And like then I make a to-do list and then I go down. It's been really, really helpful to kind of grasp about all, because I have a lot of projects that I manage. So like it helps me keep the spinning plates, keep track of the spinning plates that I have going on. So,
well, girl, we'll be thinking about you. Get back to us. Let us know what you land on. And if you find out your boss is like, you know, got like been fucking smuggling cocaine under hours so you've been doing your work. All right, let's take another call.
Yes.
Hi, Moles, Christina, and Wags and guests. I have a dirty 30s question. So, you know, partying is not what it used to be. It's more board games and bottles of wine. And one of my best friends has a boyfriend, lovely guy, and he always brings over wine. The problem is that we have very different palates. Like, I like a bold red and he likes syrup. So he always wants to like, oh, let's open my bottle. And so what do you think is the best way to navigate having a different taste level or palate, let's just say, with someone else that wants to be very generous and, offer you something, but also you don't want that kind of hangover for the next day. Let me know. Thank you so much. And as always, a very big, very, very big fan. Bye-bye.
Well, I wish we had like a Marissa Ross moment so that she could, because that's the...
I thought about like texting you to text her. But
yeah, she was. She had some terrible troll that was after her. It was awful. So like I like don't want to bother her right now either. Like it was terrible. She like detailed some fucking Facebook. Evil person. So anyway, all that said, I mean... Listen, you're an adult, and just because someone brought something over, you don't have to have a bite of it. If you were diabetic and he brought a cake over, let him enjoy his cake. Like, yeah. I think that everyone's allowed to drink what they want to drink. That said, if you would like to, you know, have a small, just say like, oh, I'll just take like a half glass. I want to try what you brought, but I like, you know, just I just need a half glass. That's it. So what I would like recommend to you, like I know you like a bold red, but like a chilled summer drinking wine, like a red drinking, like sort of summer wine might be really good for you this time of year and also a good introduction to him to like sort of medium level wines.
I remember the exact wine that Marissa actually recommended for an all day red drinking wine that's actually a little bit dry. It's Beaujolais. Do not get Beaujolais Nouveau.
I was
going to
say, yeah.
Beaujolais Nouveau is not as good. It's also just like really you're supposed to have it around Thanksgiving when it comes out. Regular Beaujolais is a nice, like it's a little bit fuller body, but it's light enough that might please both crowds.
But there's Beaujolais from that whole wine region and not all of them are the chilled red. So make sure when you're looking that you're looking for a chilled red. If that's like, if you want to like sort of bring him over to your side. But I like, I mean, if you want, like, I don't know what
your dry rosé maybe would be like a dry nice bridge.
Sure. Yeah. A dry rosé. Like, yeah. Get something from,
Miraval.
Côte de Provence would be like, just that region is fine. Like, as long as it's a paler pink. I like French rosés and Miraval's great. Miraval's really good. Like that's a good softball. But if you're looking, if you want to get more into reds, I mean, I personally, if I'm going to drink a red, I want a Malbec or a Cab. Mm-hmm. That's like my preferred thing. And by the way, I don't know where you are. I don't know what like what access you have to like certain types of wines. But like my favorite like $9 bottle of red is like Alamos Malbec. And like I know that probably true wine drinkers out there are cringing. But like that's you can get that for like $11 at the supermarket. It's like something that they often have deals on. I don't get a hangover from it. I do think that like I feel you too because I think that's a fair thing to say to him. Again, like if you were diabetic, you can say to him, sugary wines really affect me. So like I'm going to have a little sip. And that's only if you want to like do the formality of drinking his wine. They all have a little sip. But like you don't have to take anything into your body you don't want. I don't know why all these adults are sitting around drinking one bottle of wine.
I think people get in their feelings about like hurting someone's feelings about their recommendation. Go ahead, Kristen.
Oh no, just like I was gonna say you're gonna drink more than one bottle of wine anyway. So I'd just be like, yeah, pour me a little glass of that, and then quickly open yours, be like, you know we're gonna go through it. I mean, this is I had something too.
If you wanna like avoid the confrontation, just be like, oh, I heard someone recommend this wine on a podcast. Why don't we try this?
I'm not saying being like, oh, your wine's nasty.
No,
just be like, whites give me a headache, but or like just be like, oh, I brought, don't worry about the wine. I got something this week that you might really like.
There's that. Yes. And there's also like, like, hey, why don't you take care of the dessert this time? I'll take care of the wine.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like something where they can like, you can, they can still bring something and like, yeah, be contributive.
But, or
like,
say, I got this great bottle of red. I'm going to drink that. You're more than welcome to have as much as you want. Or if you want to bring something that's closer to what you like, feel free to bring your own. Yeah. You know?
Self-care in your dirty 30s, honey, is about.
Yes.
Yes. It's about taking care of yourself. And at the end of the day, like, fuck other people's opinions of you. And like, he is your friend. He's just like, joke about it. Oh, you know, you like those dry Zinfandels. Like, yeah, bitch, I do. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. I've never had someone in my house or like ever. And I really don't like going to someone else's house and having a gun to my head about, oh, we're all drinking this cocktail tonight. Like, we're all drinking. I'm making blanks tonight. Like, when someone comes into my house, I'm like, I have vodka, I have wine, I have beer. Like, I try to keep something that I know a little bit of everyone. Like, I don't ever touch the vodka because, like, I just can't drink vodka at
home. And I would.
But, yeah, exactly. But I want to have a vodka soda for someone if they come over. Drinks are one of the most obvious things when it comes to, like, a specific palate, you know? If someone came into my house and said, oh, like, I don't care for white wine, like, you know, or I don't I don't like grapefruit LaCroix. I'll just have like a water. That flavor doesn't do it for me. That happens every day at my house. Every time someone comes over, I offer them a fridge full of drinks. Some people, sometimes they like one thing, sometimes they like another. I don't ever have a hurt feeling like, oh, you don't like Topo Chico? Like my drink isn't good enough for you? Okay. Well, like go get your own. Well, I'd like to see what kind of seltzer water you keep at your house.
Yeah.
Like I don't have that attitude about it. So like I think that like, especially if you're at a place in your life, you're still calling it dirty 30s. Like, yeah, you are a relaxed person. Be relaxed about it. Like, this is not, there's no need for a confrontation. It doesn't need to be like, you know, Sam and Rose, I'd like to speak to you about a violation that's been going on in my home for some time. My palate does not prefer fruity wines. I feel like you bring this wine to my house and it's on me to drink it. And if I don't drink it, I'm crossing our friendships. That is the most dramatic, insane conversation I've ever had. So like when you think about the fact that like you're afraid to even just say, no, that's not my thing, but I have this.
Yeah.
And if this guy's fucking weird and he like takes it personal, I'm sorry, like, that's your friend's weird-ass husband, and, like...
He has tacky taste in wine.
Yeah, and then that's what it is. That's the beginning and end of it, because I know that for a fact that if someone comes to my house and they say, that has too much sugar in it, yeah, I can't drink it, my reaction to that would be like, oh, by all means.
Yeah.
Like, literally, what else can I make you? Because, like, inflicting something that makes someone feel terrible on a dietary basis, if you're too afraid to stand up for yourself in that respect, this man's a psychotic person.
Yeah.
And, like, you just need to know that about him and learn how to adapt to that situation, which, yeah, is, okay, my friend's actually married to a lunatic, and it's not about the wine.
Yeah.
And how do we manage this long term that he wants to do things to my body that I don't want done?
Right.
You know, take care of yourself because no one else will. And then the second most important rule is you do you, boo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have any wine recommendations, Chris?
I mean, I like a Malbec too. I don't have like certain, let's see.
I mean, look at Silver Lake wine right now and see like some descriptions. Let me like see if there's anything.
Justin Isosceles is really, really good. Stag's Leap won a bunch of awards. I feel like if you can get like a Stag's Leap, yeah, of a certain type. I mean, these are like dream. You know, these are like the stuff I would like get like if we were all celebrating something at a restaurant, you know?
Yeah. Go check out Marissa A. Ross's website and see.
And also she has a lot of like obscure wines. Like I will say that like one thing that I'll never forget, like my mom and stepdad like sort of drilled into me was they always buy J. Lore. Like they would, mm-hmm, buy it like in cases. And I remember being like, Mom, this is like a grocery store wine. Like what the fuck? And she was like, no, she's like, this is actually a very good, like, standard table wine. Like, it's, like, $20 a bottle. Like, this is, like, there's no shame in, like, not having a fucking fancy-ass wine. Like,
yeah,
you can have a good bottle of a lot of different types of wine. I'm going to go to the...
I'm not, like, mad at a supermarket wine moment. Like, I enjoy, like, that's a 37 Noble Vines moment, which is, like, their Cabernet Sauvignon. Josh Wines is actually pretty decent.
You know, this is another thing is that most people, Josh wines are good, actually.
Yeah.
My opinion on this is that most people only really have access to grocery stores yeah. and like maybe some specialty shops, but we in LA have a very
like it's insane how many wine shops and like
cheese shops, honey.
Even like the supermarkets here carry really great yeah. wines because we have such a wine community.
Alias Pinot Noir at Silver Lake Wine right now is actually very good. I've had this 100% Pinot Noir fruit in this rather impressive wine for the price. Sourcing from mostly the Mendocino region as well as Sonoma. This wine offers ripe, pretty Pinot fruit with great balance and freshness. Like, that sounds like a dope-ass wine.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a nice, like, this wine from Portugal, Douro Red 2015. Basically, most grapes I had never heard of in this blend. This red is no exception, showing 8 different local grapes, light, dry, very good table wine. Like, I think honestly, like a nice red table wine, you can't go wrong with. Like, with table wine, I would go a little bit higher end because table wine is basically just yeah. like a mishmash.
Yeah.
But that's what good comes from a mishmash is that it's meant to appease a lot of people.
Yeah, I actually don't mind a blend.
I love a blend.
I love a blend. Yeah. I have to stay away from Chardonnay. And there's one wine that I've been ordering from Silver Lake Wine that I can never order again. It makes me ill.
Oh, wow.
So you have to, like, it's something about maybe the way that they deal with the grapes that it's, like, a little fucked up for me. But, yeah, just do some experimentation. Figure out what you like, you know? When you know, go sample wines. Like, there's got to be a wine bar in almost any city. And I know, actually, Whole Foods in a lot of cities does wine sampling.
Yeah.
So check out Whole Foods for, like, a nice bottle of red. Ask the wine staff at, like, Whole Foods is very knowledgeable. And also, the wine staff at Trader Joe's is pretty knowledgeable as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and Trader Joe's and Whole Foods both have more diverse selections than your average grocery store anyway. Yeah. So those are probably the best places to check in any given city.
Yeah, you can get Bonterra there as organic and, like, doesn't have sulfates. You know, find out what you want. And you can do a wine tasting with your friends. And then maybe you can, like, give some of that knowledge to someone there that
needs
it.
That's a great idea for a party is everyone brings a bottle. And every, like, put together a big ass group and everyone brings like a bottle.
You shame him.
That speaks to their soul. Yeah.
Because no one will pick his wine and then he'll realize.
That's like low key, high key, a great way to get out of it.
That's what you do.
Yes.
You cracked the case, bitch. Congratulations. Chris, talented in more ways than one. Okay, let's take our next call.
We actually have a letter.
Okay, guys, this is big. We have a letter and Fancy Jean Baker is here to read it.
Special guest.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to meet you. Okay. Hi, Malls, Christina, Wags, and guest. I have a weird dating situation that I wanted to share and get your guys' take on it. So, last month, I agreed to go out with this guy from Hinge. Dating app, y'all. And we agreed to meet up at a bar downtown to see a band. We were having a good time and everything, and he ran into some guys he knew, so we were hanging out with them in a group. At one point, someone floated the idea of going to someone's house. Well, I told my date I wouldn't go to someone's house, but I'd be down to go to another bar, especially since the whole group was guys. During some back and forth, I made a joke about the reason for me not wanting to go somewhere with them was because he can murder me.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably an off-color joke. I was drinking, but, like, not really unrealistic thing to think about as a woman, ? Anyway, I lost track of my date for a bit, only to realize that he had literally left me at the bar without a single word. I later found out it was because of the joke I had made. Was I really in the wrong? Did that really warrant leaving me in a bar? I honestly don't know if this is just par for the course in dating or if I should be rethinking my sense of humor. Or maybe I'm being too sensitive. Sorry for not having a specific question. I really love your perspectives and would love your take on this. I'm 26 and live in Northeast Massachusetts. Hey, Miles, girl. P.S. I really do love and appreciate everything you guys do and all the hard work that goes into it. Sorry for the ramble here.
I'm so attached to that.
Jerry O'Connell.
It's better than Jerry's. No offense. Jerry's, take a seat.
He would say them fancy. He loves fancy. Jerry O'Connell is the fanciest, biggest.
Truly, honestly, people that like are good, are funny in this town, Jerry O'Connell knows, likes, and stands. It's true. He's the biggest supporter of like.
I love him.
He's very supportive. He's an angel. Okay. The joke was just you're gonna murder that. Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing. You were too discerning for them. Like you, honestly, they're looking for people a little bit dumber than you. Yep. People that aren't really gonna question going to the house. And I think something bad was gonna happen at that house that
Feminine
night.
Feminine instincts, honey.
Yeah, I think that you got left at the bar. <tell me. laughs> Yeah, because it became apparent.
You're smart.
That you're not gonna that. Honestly, like, that's that kind of asshole that's going to be like, she's being a fucking bitch. She's being like a fucking pain in the ass. Like, she came over and she like, wouldn't even drink. We were like doing blow. Like, her friends were making out and she wasn't even fucking like.
She didn't give me a hand.
Yeah. Like, she was like fucking being a bitch the whole time. Like, that's that guy, right? Yeah.
This was a Hinge date that she came to meet a guy.
Yeah.
And then he saw his friends.
Somehow.
Yeah, right?
Happened to run into his friends.
And then they were hanging out as a group. It's still your date.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's why you were like being cool. Now, here's the thing. You dodged a bullet who knows how big, honey. And I want you to do something right now. I want you to pat yourself on the goddamn back.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you are alive and you are like doing it and you trusted your instincts. F that guy. You know you're not being too
any
sensitive.
Guy worth his salt historically, but also especially now, should know how vulnerable women feel. Yes. Should know that that is a scary situation to meet a stranger online and then to have him try and take you to a second location with a bunch of his guy friends. That's a tall order. And any guy with any sort of decency, respect for women, who has a sister, a mother he truly loves. who would never want to be put in that position. That guy's a fucking mess. And like, not only is it like, would have something bad happened sooner, probably rather than later, but the fact that like you having a genuine concern for your safety was some sort of buzzkill for him is very scary because who knows what would have happened if you went to that house. Like, truly.
Yeah.
Like, you were, like, down to go to another bar. That wasn't good enough for him. He wanted to go back to the house.
Yeah.
Like.
He also just didn't honor, like, the framework in terms of, like, being on a date.
100%. He could have also always planned on, like, getting a girl shit-faced on a Hinge date and bringing her back to the house.
Yep.
Like, I think it's very true what you said. It's not a coincidence that he ran into his friends there. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they meet there every Saturday night for trivia. And like, he just was like, yeah, this week I'm going to bring a fucking Hinge date. Like, let's get our shit face. We'll go back to the place. Who knows? You don't know if they do drugs. You don't know like how hard they party. You don't know where they live, if it's safe, if it's in a good neighborhood, if you can trust these men. You don't know any of that stuff.
Yeah. You could put that motherfucker on blast, honey. Like, I want to see a meme right now of his picture and then last text where he said that he left you because of that. And I want to see that person and no one go out with that person.
I question guys that don't wait for my lift. Like, I won't go out with a guy if he doesn't wait for my lift with me.
Yeah.
I won't go out with a guy ever again. Because that's, like, such a huge sign that even on the first date, you don't want to send someone off properly and, like, make sure that your date isn't, like, tipsy standing on the side of the road. Like, that's the most fucked up thing. Like, this man left you at a bar because you wouldn't accept an unreasonable request. And then, like, this man, like, he's not going to open a door for you.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to...
Not walk on the side
I had
of the street,
a moment with a boyfriend I think about. He lived in like an area that was fine. It was like the Studio City area, but there was a dumpster next to his back door. And homeless people often slept in, lived around, or took from that dumpster. And oftentimes they'd be people that were incoherent, you know, on drugs of some kind because it wasn't far from, I think, the last like bus stop or something on like the Hollywood run. So
the train is right.
Yeah, so there was always like something like, no, that's fine. Okay. So basically, one night we were getting inside and there was a scuffle by the dumpster. And I was like, get the door. And he opened the door, pushed himself ahead of me And the door closed with me still outside and he was inside. And when I got inside, I said to him, you understand that you just saved yourself and locked me out in the process, right? Like, thank God nothing happened, but your instinct was to save your life to the extent that you didn't even care if I, like, you didn't even just jump ahead of me and like kind of fling the door open. You like let the door close behind you.
I am.
When I was the one who told you we were in danger in the first place. Like it was really, really telling to me. But it was very far into the relationship.
That's not a fly. That's a siren. Like that's like.
I know. And like, and at that point I knew the person was selfish, but I had become so much like used to selfishness that like,
yeah,
this was just another thing where I was like, well, you know, I guess, you know, whenever we're, you know, married and have kids, like, I guess, like, I'm just going to have to always make sure that I'm in front, like, when there's an emergency. Like.
And the kids, too?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, me and the kids are just going to have to, like, make sure that we're by the front door first, always. You know? Like, it was really, like. Oh, Jesus. And also, think about, like, the honestly, what scared me the most was, like, almost the lack of immediate remorse. Where, like, if they would have been like, oh, my God, I am so fucking sorry. Like, that is the, like, that I've learned a lesson. Like, no. Like, if I actually started to think about it, I was like, I bet if a person had killed me that night that he would still be more grateful that he got in ahead of me than guilty that I died because he didn't protect me.
He probably would have been like, oh, man, that could have been me.
Yeah, that could have been me. Not, oh, I fucking am responsible for that. Like, if any. So that said, this is a this. You fucking caught onto a red flag. And I'm going to tell you now, do not be sorry that this happened. Do not worry about your jokes. Your joke was not a joke. It was a genuine concern. But women feel like they have to soften things by saying, like, hey, you're not going to kill me, right? Like, every time we get into an Uber, like, in the back of our heads, we're thinking, like, huh, yeah, you're not going to, like, come back, right? Like, and fucking kill me, right? Because I've had things like that happen where, like, someone comes back that shouldn't fucking come back. And it's like, yo, this is a fucking safety violation and a boundary. So women, we think like that. And men, for the most part, know that. And, like, to not honor that, you found a special kind of ignorant or a special kind of evil. And, like, that is something you need to not feel bad at, about at all. You never knew that homeless person story, right? The dumpster story.
I mean, I think you could tell by my reaction from it. Because if it had
– tea.
If I had known –
spilling that hot tea.
Some shit would have gone down.
You got some blisters from that hot tea.
Yeah, I would have had to had some words, as we say in
Brooklyn, yeah.
And I would not have been speaking.
But
this would have been the dude. No, I'm just kidding.
But, I wouldn't be speaking if that man murdered me. So that said, or you're killing it. You're great. I'm like, I'm alive. You're not. But all right, girl, congratulations on fucking having a brain and using it. And don't feel bad about that at all. You made a good call. Made a good call. Let's take another. Speaking of good calls, 323-450-7408. You guys should call our show and leave messages. We need them. Our show only works if we get your calls. I know I say that at the top, but maybe after you heard us, how we so brilliantly cracked that case, maybe you're thinking to yourself, maybe there's some more unsolved mysteries in my past that Malls, Christina, Guest, and Wags can crack open. So call us up, 323-450-7408. Let's take a call.
Hey, please advise. I'm calling with an anonymous tip. I just listened to your latest episode. It talked about the college scandal, and I actually, a friend of mine worked as an assistant to one of the people who were indicted, and she got the tea. So if we're thinking of consequences, which I think you guys were talking about, this man bribed Georgetown to get his son in as an athletic recruit, which is pretty close to the whole Lori Loughlin thing. So his bail was set at $250,000. So he had to pay $25,000 cash and then put up his house for the rest of the bail value. His son was kicked out of Georgetown. He lost his job, which paid him $600,000 a year. His wife is a realtor and she's losing a lot of her business because people can't trust her and, you know, real estate's a trust-based business. And then he's hired, Mark Yargos. I hope this doesn't expose me. And he charges $1,100 an hour. So outside of like the financial impact of it all, that's just the federal charges. And he also, you know, the evil part of this is that they all deducted it on their taxes. And so he still has all of the IRS consequences. So anyway, I love your pod. I love everything you guys do. I hope you find this interesting, whether you play it or not. And keep up the good work.
We've talked about this scandal for like six episodes.
The tea. Yeah. No, I feel so grateful she called, though. Like, I don't care, because this is like fucking, this hits to like a huge cross section of a lot of our issues, which is that a lot of our listeners graduate into the same recession we did. Mm-hmm. A lot of our listeners are starting out their career in college, accruing massive debt.
Yep.
They're like, you know, just out of college, trying to get their footing. They're older and they know that this is like the oldest scam in the game. People have been doing it forever. These people just did it the dirtiest and dumbest you could do it.
Yep.
Who knew about the side door? I've been thinking about that. The front door, the back door, and the fucking side door is what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Tea.
Yeah. I know.
Okay. Can I say my first thing that's going to sound incredibly shitty?
Yeah, you have to now.
$600,000 a year is not the type of money I was expecting people who participated in this to be making annually.
Absolutely.
Because, like, I know maybe on a great year, he's probably saving $100,000 of that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure his wife is also making a pretty decent killing with her real estate, but you definitely like seem to have more information on the husband, which to me says that he's probably the more prominent earner in the family. So he must also be from money himself, because $600,000 a year, yes, I think any of us would want that job. Like, that's a fucking life-changing job. It's a life-making job.
I wouldn't even want it for like the rest of my life. I would just want it for like a year so I can make that 600.
Yeah, exactly. And then work like you have money now.
Well, think about it. They had to put up their house for $25,000.
Right. And also, like, same with Lori and Massimo. They each had $1 million bail, and they had to
they paid the 25. He had to put it up for the rest of the 250.
No. You pay 10% as your bail. So he used the 25%. He used the 25% of the bail against his house.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Lori Massimo had $1 million bail each, and they used their house as a collateral. Thank you. And their house is worth $35 million. Mm-hmm. So like, it's almost like these people are running a much smaller game than like anyone else. And $250,000 is a lot. That's like what Olivia Jade's parents paid. So his son must be a real fucking dummy. No offense. You know, cause they definitely like marketed that shit to people who really needed the help. You know, like if your kid needed a SAT answer changed, probably we're only charging you $100,000. When you're getting to 250, that's the big league, you know.
Yeah.
Shit. This is amazing tea. I mean, you're going to have to bring in Mark Garagos or whatever, because, yes, $1,100 an hour lawyer fee is insane. That said, you know they're being sued for $500 billion, right?
Yeah.
By one of the families that, like, a student that didn't get into USC is suing.
Perfect SATs and, like 4.2 GPA.
$500 billion with a B. That is like, I know you have to come in with like the most insane ask ever in order to like even get, you know, 5 million or something. You have to come in at like 250 or 500 billion. But like, that is oof. The tea.
I remember just being like, you know, when I went to college, like late '90s, early 2000s, or high school, I'm sorry. Like I remember trying to get into colleges and it's being like, you have to like do extracurricular or whatever. And I went to Mater Dei, which was like literally a college prep, huge college prep here in Orange County or whatever in Southern California. And like, I just remember like people like being in so many AP classes and like, most people just went to like USC or LMU. Like only a handful like actually even got into like Harvard. You know what I'm saying? Like we were a huge college prep. Like I know that was the reason why I got into LMU. Like I don't know if I get into LMU now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot harder. But I mean, I don't know.
I wonder like I don't know. I don't want to like put our caller on blast because she just did such a generous thing for us.
Thank you.
But I do have to know. I like want to know how she's close to this. She said like her friend was like a how did she say? She said someone she knew was like a tutor, somehow like affiliated with
something like that. But we can find out off pod.
Oh, of course. I'm just like it's so interesting to think about.
Look it up now and tell a name.
Like the ripples that could be happening in like every community that like, you know, I'm sure that like the social ramifications have been awful. Like the worst part of this for like the parents, and besides the whole like, you know, federal indictment shit, is that like, you know, you're immediately putting a lens on the bad behavior of everyone around you.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm sure there's people in Malibu that won't fuck with them simply because they made their chances of getting caught for the same type of behavior that much worse, you know? And it goes deep, man. Like Jared Kushner, they think is tied into this and his Harvard acceptance and all that shit. Like,
well, the Jared Kushner thing was more of the dad paying like an exorbitant donating a lot of money to Harvard right before Jared got it.
Oh, I thought they were saying that this – I think that there was another thing. I might be wrong, but I thought that there was another claim saying that like it might have even been also like some under the table stuff. Oh, okay. Like he could have been from one of the earlier classes of – because this has been going on for like a decade or something.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people, probably a lot of prominent people that were a part of this. I do wonder though about the grades because this situation is obviously very different. There was no money involved, but like I had to earn every single grade I got in college. Like there was no graces for being John McAleer's granddaughter. My grandfather taught there for like 50 years. Like there was no graces for that. Like I had to do all the homework, all the tests. Like my grades weren't always that great. And like it was because I was expected to work hard. I don't know how these people like – are they saying there's some sort of collusion with the teachers as well? Because, like, it seems like once these people get in, they still graduate, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
But isn't that, like, expression is, like, what do you call med school students with D's?
Doctors?
Yeah. Like.
Yeah, it might be something like that. It also might be a little bit of grade inflation at play.
Yeah, oh, sure.
So. I don't know.
I mean, they were paying proctors to take their SAT scores. So, like, where does it stop?
But, like, how do they – yeah, I guess so. I mean, like, but it's just, like, how many –
how do they continue to be fully matriculated college students for 4 years if they couldn't even pass?
Because, like, every teacher would have to, like, on some level, like, unless it was the rare subject that they excelled at, every teacher at some level, that, like, that's an official process of, like, entering a grade into, like, a school computer and, like, having that appear in your transcript. That's, like, from my memory of it, was, like, a sacred process when they, like, enter your grades. So, because they can't be changed, you know? So that, I do wonder, like.
They could have just been D students, all of them.
Sure, exactly. Sure. And then, but then part of me is also like, some people are built for college and not high school. Maybe these people were poor high school students and then good and very, I was great. I was much better in college than I was in high school.
Yeah. Cause it was so much of it was essay based instead of like stupid Scantron multiple choice bullshit.
Yeah. But that is some interesting tea.
It was hot and fresh.
And that said, I feel like that could be a jumping off point for other people in Please Advise Nation who have their own tea. And maybe you're doing a little bit of connecting work at home. So whether we read it on the air or off the air, you guys, you know we're invested in this. We will keep an email anonymous. Christina runs the email, and Christina is a fucking vault. So there's a chance that I might not even get to see it. So don't worry about your emails being forwarded or some shit like that.
If
you
have tea. I also have like 2 password protection services. So
yeah, so spill the tea.
Secure.
Spill the tea to us, and we will – and make sure you mention whether or not you want us to share it. But I want to know because I bet there's a lot of mental connections for things that are firing up for people out there who like went to school with someone and then like, how the fuck did they get into Harvard?
Yeah.
Like how the fuck, like, you know, like, yeah. Yeah. I love that. Do we have any more calls?
That's it.
Ah, you guys, that was episode 191 of Please Advise. We are a lot closer to 200 than I thought. Anyway, you guys, we've had a fun episode. There's been tears, there's been laughs, there's been wine, there's been tea, there's been everything.
Accents.
accents.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I love bringing some sweet tea to y'all.
You guys, if you want to, like, please encourage Chris. Chris Alfaro, is that what you are on Twitter?
Yeah.
Follow her. Follow her on yeah, Christina, like, that was your first taste of it. And you haven't even seen the whole thing. This is just, like, the fancy, like, this is Chris is, like, just doing the voice. Like, it is the most, it's such a spectacle. It's so special. I feel like I've talked this up so much.
You really have.
Fucking set up a GoFundMe, girl. Like, set up a Patreon because Please Advise Nation will have your back after this.
Oh, my God. Yes. Thank you. But
I really do think that it would be really fun if we did a small live show and had Chris, like, open for us or be a guest as Fancy.
Yes. Yes.
I would
advise us.
Yeah, no, and that's what she does.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Yes. Yeah, I love that.
Okay, I like this idea.
That would even be like a fun idea if we just had like an occasional segment where Chris answered and like a call like via voicemail and just sent us the voicemail as Fancy. Yeah. That would be fabulous. Guys, 323-450-7408. Give us a call. We take your calls at all times, any time of the day. It goes to a voicemail machine. You can also email voice notes to askpeaceadvice@gmail.com. Christina, you're the best. Wags,
you're the best, Malls.
You're getting better. And Chris, thank you so much. Like, you're just beyond. Go check Chris out.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. It was an honor.
Okay, I love you guys. Bye.